29th for Racial Bias Education. The training is meant to prevent discrimination to make sure everyone feels safe and welcome. This stems from the arrests of two black men at a Philadelphia store that sparked nationwide backlash. Nearly 175,000 Starbucks employees will be involved in the training to discuss inclusion and preventing discrimination. The D.C. police officers will now also be required to take a course on race relations and theory. The new city program will teach officers about race relations and how to counter bias in policing. Chief Peter Newsham hopes all 3,800 officers will complete the course by the end of the year. Joining me now on the WHUR News Live Line is Darlene Slaughter. She is a veteran HR executive. Darlene, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Hi, and welcome.
What might that training look like? What would employees hear as they sit through the training that Starbucks and the police are looking at?
Well, the training will focus on, there's a scientific part of the training that talks about the brain science and why people have biases. What we do know is that all people have biases, regardless of what group, what race, what gender you're part of. And the training will actually help people to become aware of those biases and to recognize how they're making decisions in a variety of ways. So are we making decisions around race? Are we making decisions around gender, sexual orientation, religion, social economic status, and other factors? And so the training really goes deep in terms of what are your values? What is your belief system? How are you making those decisions? And then why are you making those decisions? And then to stop yourself when those quick decisions are actually happening.
Quickly, let me ask you, Starbucks is doing this in an afternoon. Can it be done in an afternoon? And how might this improve the culture?
So you could do it in the afternoon. I mean, it's a lot of offices, it's a lot of stores, it's a lot of people. And the question that I would have is, what comes after the training? I think you can do the training to make people aware, but in order to change the culture, you actually have to integrate it into the culture. So you have to look at your policies. You have to look at how are you holding people, individuals accountable, how do you hold the organization accountable, and how is it consistent and sustainable? Because you can't just do a one-time training and then expect things to change.
Okay.
Right?
Well,
uh-huh.
Well, thank you. Darlene Slaughter, HR executive, I appreciate your input. A year ago, 22-year-old Marty McMillan disappeared after arranging a date on the website Plenty of Fish. Today, D.C. police announced an arrest in his murder.
Members of the Metropolitan Police Department's fugitive unit transported 40-year-old John McCray of Southeast D.C. to the homicide branch, where he was charged on an outstanding arrest warrant with second-degree murder while armed.
Police Chief Peter Newsham says John McCray was the boyfriend of Shania Davis, the woman McMillan made the date with. Newsham says McMillan was shot at an apartment on MLK Avenue and his body dumped in the woods along Suitland Parkway. Another arrest may be possible in the case, according to Newsham. McRae will be arraigned tomorrow. And the Internal Revenue Service has fixed the online filing service technical problems that surfaced overnight. The service was partially down for most of the day, preventing those who owe Uncle Sam from making payments or signing up for payment plans. And by the way, if you're still working on your taxes, you have less than 5 hours before that midnight deadline. Time now for Donna Wilson and the Bloomberg Business Report.
U.S. stocks rose for a second day amid better-than-expected company earnings. The Dow rose 213 points, S&P 500 up 28, the Nasdaq climbed 124 points. And she's moving up to the top spot. Leslie Hale is the current COO and CFO at RLJ Lodging Trust. But in August, Hale will become the chief executive officer of the $1.2 billion real estate investment firm. RLJ Lodging is founded and chaired by Robert Johnson, the billionaire founder of BET. I'm Donna Wilson with the WHUR Business Report.
If you run a small business, you know there's nothing small about it. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors are here to help with solutions tailored to your business. And for a limited time, get up to 35% off select PCs with Intel Core processors, plus free shipping on everything. Talk to a Dell Small Business Advisor today at 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
There is a sound no business owner should ever hear. It could mean you're out of ink, paper, or maybe that old printer is done for good.
I think we lost him.
Go to Staples. Staples has low prices every day on a great selection of ink, paper, and the latest printers. Now at Staples, get 50% off the HP OfficeJet Pro 6900 series. Staples, your total printing solution.
While supplies last, valid on SKU 225-6781 and 225-6786. Ends 4/21/18.
Get your classic soul and Motown in Soul Town. For the Detroit sound of Aretha. To the Memphis soul of Al.
Let's speak together.
Or the funk of James.
Wow, I feel good.
And the hallway harmony of the Supremes. Make sure you stop.
Gonna put it on Soul Town.
In Soul Town, Channel 49.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 22 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. MatchingDonors.com.
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Javon Harley, your travel pro with the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices. Join me every Saturday at noon Eastern Time for the style and culture of travel. Join Club Culturati and connect with me on social media at TravelingCulturati.com.
From A Tribe Called Quest to The Roots, Queen Latifah to Missy Elliott, Goody Mob to Wale. It's a show wrapped in a culture called hip-hop. Every Saturday and Sunday from midnight to 3 a.m. Eastern, it's The Takeover. The Takeover is a progressive hip-hop show with a hint of R&B. It's a party every weekend on your radio. The Takeover, weekend starting at midnight on Sirius XM, Channel 141, HUR Voices.
Welcome to WHUR World, a progressive mix of music and information. We broadcast across the World Wide Web and offer programming that entertains, educates, and provides context for mature adult listening audience. Our intensive blend of classic jazz, rhythm and blues, hip-hop, African-American folk, gospel, and world music inspires creative thought and imagination. WHUR World, 96.3 HD2, part of the Howard University Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. In sports, the Wizards are back in action tonight. They take on the Raptors in Game 2 of their Eastern Conference quarterfinals in Toronto. Washington will try to even the best of seven matchup at one game. They dropped a series opener 114-106 on Saturday. That game is already underway. The series will shift to D.C. for Game 3 on Friday. Let's take a look at our weather now. Another freeze warning tonight as we continue to hope for spring-like weather. Lows ranging from near 30 to the upper 30s. Tomorrow, clouds in the morning, clearing during the day. Highs are in the near 60 to mid 60s. Well, coming up, understanding autism now and as a child grows up. We're talking about it. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Insight is next.
The NBA playoffs.
That's picked up by LeBron James. He goes all the way and crunches home a dunk. Oh, my.
The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs.
Kucherov, a breakaway. Kucherov holds. Score!
every second of every thrilling game is on SiriusXM. Game times and channel numbers are at SiriusXM.com/sports now. And listen to your hometown play-by-play call with the SiriusXM app.
SiriusXM Channel 141 presents Voices Specials, radio documentaries that explore the African-American experience. Voices Specials will educate, entertain, and inform you about the unique experience of Black Americans. Voices Specials will enlighten and encourage with in-depth exploration of politics, education, civil rights, economics, social justice, and entertainment. Voices Specials will air the last Friday of each month on HUR Voices SiriusXM Channel 141. Tune in and join us.
Hi, I'm Jay Schutte, an American farmer, giving back to agricultural leadership of tomorrow with $2,500 I won through the America's Farmers Grow Communities Program, sponsored by the Monsanto Fund. I really benefited from agricultural leadership of tomorrow as a young professional. I encourage farmers to support their favorite nonprofit through the Grow Communities Program. Enroll now. Visit www.growcommunities.com or call 877-267-3332.
Hi, this is Dr. Willie Jolly, host of The Wealthy Way Show, here on SiriusXM Channel 141, and I want to invite you to join me every Saturday at 4 o'clock Eastern, where you'll hear the best and the brightest thought leaders tell you how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, and how to live your dream and make it happen now. I want you to join me on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, here on SiriusXM Channel 141. This is Dr. Willie Jolly, and remember, your best is yet to come.
Are you a diehard fan of Howard University Athletics? Looking to lend support to the Bison teams you love? Then make sure you check out Howard University's Bison Express, an organization formed by the fans of Howard University Athletics that is dedicated to providing an exceptional athletic and educational experience for the student athletes. For more information on Bison Express, visit BisonExpress.org. BisonExpress.org.
If you really knew me.
If you really knew me.
Miguel. If you really knew Miguel, you would know.
Well, I fell in love with music early on. Ooh, the very first song I wrote, I can't
really tell you about.
It was about some girl. I grew up in a time in Los Angeles where there was a lot of racial tension between Mexicans and Blacks.
Want to know more?
Check out The Artist Lounge, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on SiriusXM Channel 141 HUR Voices.
96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, SiriusXM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and SiriusXM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is one of the most confusing and mysterious neurological disorders impacting children at a very early age. Autism continues to raise so many questions for doctors and parents. Well, tonight we're taking a closer look during Autism Awareness Month. My guests are Dr. Martine Ely, Clinical Director at the Howard University Speech and Hearing Clinic, Faye Painter, Executive Director of Autism Speaks for the National Capital Area, and Dr. Anna Trouth, Chair of the Department of Neurology at Howard University Hospital. Lines are open if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you are looking for resources regarding autism, please give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting us.
Dr. Trouth, let me start with you. Can you give me a working definition of autism, and more specifically, what is often referred to as the autism spectrum?
Autism is really a behavioral, social, and communications disorder. And it is included in the autism spectrum disorders, formerly also known as pervasive developmental disorders. But the autism spectrum disorders, they all have a problem with behavior, communication, and social skills. Now, there are several entities in it. One is your Asperger syndrome, where people are cognitively normal, you know, and can function quite well, except for the social difficulties that they have. We also have things like Rett syndrome and childhood disintegrative disorder, which are all part of the autism spectrum disorder syndrome. Mm-hmm. Now, autism itself, you know, which is an autism spectrum disorder, you know, is characterized in infants by difficulty with social communication, verbal communication. They're not able to make friends. They cannot socialize. They cannot interact with other kids. They have stereotypic behavior. They repeat the same things. They have very rigid, inflexible type of behavior patterns. They may just sit in one place and move the wheels of a car back and forth, and they do not interact with people, and they do not communicate with people. So that is the major problem in autism, the communication behavior and social interaction difficulties.
Faye, how common is autism in its various forms? I was talking to Ms. Painter. Doctor. Please go right ahead, Faye.
Okay. Autism is now diagnosed in 1 out of 68 children, and it's 1 in 42 for boys. So it's, you know, it's fairly prevalent. Mm-hmm. Yes.
From the perspective of autism speaks, and I think we can talk about this quite in depth. There are some children that are on the spectrum that seem almost 100% normal, and then others not so. They're called high functioning. Thank you. Talk to me about
that. Well, the spectrum is just that. And if you meet one person with autism, you've just met one person, because everybody is different. Everyone has their own individual strengths as well as their own challenges. So as the doctor just said, the three sets of behaviors for the diagnosis are challenges with communication, social skills, and repetitive behaviors. These can impact a person strongly or not quite as strong. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, you know, pretty much a normal bell curve on intelligence. So it's not an intellectual disorder, although that could be coupled with it for some people. Let's see. So the prevalence, 1 in 68, there's 70 million people worldwide who are affected by it. Now, as the doctor also said, there used to be separate diagnoses for Asperger's, for PDD, which is pervasive developmental disorder, and autism and so forth. And they've all been rolled into the autism spectrum. And we like to think of this spectrum that's more like a color wheel than a spectrum that goes from high to low, because that's really more realistic to think about people as a whole, and may impact it's a full body disorder. Mm-hmm. So there's coexisting medical conditions for most, not all, but for most people with autism. That includes gastrointestinal problems.
Really?
Yes. Seizures, mm-hmm. sleep disturbances, mm-hmm. Can have also ADD or ADHD, anxiety, depression, and eating disorders.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're taking a closer look at children with autism. If you have a question, if you have a comment, you can give us a call. Lines are open. Dr. Ellie, you work with children and indeed, older teens who are dealing with speech-related issues. Talk to me about the work that you do as it relates to autism.
Well, as Faye said, one of the major areas that is affected with autism is communication. And so oftentimes we service children or adults that have autism, and so their communication skills may vary. You may have someone that's verbal, that's nonverbal, and if they're nonverbal, we may provide them with augmentative and alternative communication devices.
What does that mean?
It means a variety of things. So it could be a picture exchange to request an item. It can be using more complex items such as a keyboard or devices in which an individual can press and the device will speak and it will have pre-programmed messages.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're taking a look at autism tonight during this Autism Awareness Month. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Miss Jones, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I had a couple quick questions, and I'm going to hang up. The first one is, how early can autism be detected in children and babies? And the second question is, what kind of indicators can a parent look for if they suspect that the child may have signs of autism?
Okay, I'll
hang up.
Thank you so much. Dr. Trouth.
Right. Autism can be detected as early as 4 months if you see that the child is not making eye contact. One of the first things that little babies do is look at you and smile at you and make that social communication. And if you find a child is not really looking at you or responding to voices, so by 4 to 6 months, it's possible to diagnose autism. But very often it's the other problem. They go undiagnosed, and sometimes it might be as late as 16 months. But there have been cases reported, you know, where children have developed normally, and then after about 15, 16 months of age, have had the regression with the social communication disorders. So there is a wide spectrum in there in how early it can be diagnosed. But nowadays, the pediatricians have what is called a modified checklist for autism in toddlers, and therefore, by the time they reach 2 years, you know, they should be really identified so early intervention is possible.
Mm-hmm. What should parents do if they are looking for these kinds of things after the birth of a child? How should they begin to look for any signs whatsoever?
The baby's ability to look at you, to smile at you, to follow your expressions, to listen to you, to respond to you. So these are the things, that the early things between 4 and 6 months that may go wrong in a child. Mm. You know, so if you find that, then ask a pediatrician, ask questions. You know, is my child developing normally? Do you think this is normal for my child?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it can be detected as early as that. But sometimes, you know, people say, oh, it's normal. Some children develop slowly, you know, so don't worry about it. So the physical milestones may be normal, but it is these social, verbal communication milestones. And I've seen children who have not been diagnosed as late as 3 and 4 years of age. And I've seen children who have been diagnosed as early as 7 and 8 months of age by very astute parents.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are looking into the mysteries of autism and the autism spectrum. We have a panel of experts and clinicians who are here to provide you with answers to your questions as well as resources. If you have a question, if you have a comment, please give us a call. Of course, we are always answering questions even after 7:30 when we switch over to Sirius XM channel 141. So lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Faye, talk to me a little bit about some of the resources that Autism Speaks offers and where they can find that information.
Okay. I encourage everyone to go to our website, autismspeaks.org, because there's just so much useful, helpful information there. We have online 45 toolkits that can be downloaded free of charge. It's an amazing number. And these resources are used really by, you know, hospitals and service providers throughout the country, even, you know, globally, you know, in a lot of instances. The most popular toolkit is the 100-day toolkit, the first 100 days, which helps parents weed through their emotion and reaction to the diagnosis, where to go for help. You know, parents have to move very quickly from emotion to advocacy.
And before I go to the break, I do want to say, I want to talk a little bit more about the parenting side of mm-hmm. this, because obviously this involves the children, but parents have issues and concerns. They're going to need support, whether they are couples, whether they're single parents. There's a lot to this, and I want to make sure that after the break we talk a little bit more about that in depth. Real briefly, Dr. Ellie, where can people find out more information about the Howard University Speech and Hearing Clinic? Because I'm sure there are some parents out there who may want their children to see you.
Sure. The Speech and Hearing Clinic, our main number is 202-806-6991.
One more time, please.
202-806-6991. And we're also on the web at Howard University Speech and Hearing Clinic.
Okay. I promise, as always, that that information will be posted on WHUR.com. You will be able to find it on our website after the program. If you are on the phone, that includes Joseph calling from Sterling, Virginia, Janine calling from Rockville. We're going to talk to you. Lines are still open if you have any questions or comments about children on the autism spectrum. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please stay with us. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation on SiriusXM, Channel 141. Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we take a closer look at children on the autism spectrum. Of course, this is Autism Awareness Month. My guests are Dr. Martine Ellie, Clinical Director at the Howard University Speech and Hearing Clinic, Faye Painter, Executive Director of Autism Speaks for the National Capital Area, and Dr. Anna Trouth. She is the Chair of the Department of Neurology at Howard University Hospital. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Janine, calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling, Janine. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, how are
you? Yes, you all touched briefly on alternative communications, and I was wondering if sign language would be considered one of them, because I have a very good friend. Her son is nonverbal, mm-hmm. and we've been learning sign language to try to communicate with him better.
Yes, sign language would be a form of communication that can be utilized. For every child with autism, it's very different. It depends on their abilities. So in terms of finding out the best mechanism to help that child communicate, I would recommend seeing a speech-language pathologist that can do a comprehensive evaluation and determine what the best modality of communication is.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janine. So thank you so much for calling. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joseph, calling from Sterling, Virginia. Joseph, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I was wondering what the panel thinks about the ABC show, The Good Doctor, and whether that's been helpful or hurtful for people trying to understand the autism spectrum of disorders.
I'd be happy to talk about that. This is Faye with Autism Speaks. I wouldn't say that it's been either of those. I have heard many people watching it who enjoy the show very much. I personally have only seen it one time. I know that when it first launched, a number of media outlets contacted us and wanted to interview someone locally who was like the good doctor. And in fact, you know, we could find some people who were gainfully employed. But I want to point to the fact that employment for adults with autism is a very difficult area for people with autism, because more than 85% are not gainfully employed in adulthood. And the ones who are usually underemployed, so that they might only be working part-time or working at a level that's beneath their ability. The large issue with employment and people with autism is that they don't do well in traditional interviews. And all those job descriptions that people put together say must have good, excellent communication skills and excellent teamwork and all these things that, well, maybe a single job does have to have those things, but might be just enough to discourage a person with autism from applying for it. And, I know that there are, also, some accommodations that may have to be made for people with any disability, but with autism, there may need to be steps broken down more for some. There may need to be some visual supports. We were talking about a picture exchange system, but many people with autism do better with visual instructions rather than only verbal instructions. So I guess what I would say is that the character depicted on The Good Doctor would be is not representative of the majority of people with autism.
Joseph, thank you so much for your phone call. And I think that the next obvious question is, what about education?
Mm-hmm.
Because depending on where a child may be on the spectrum may very well determine their ability to be formally educated.
And now I do want to remind you that it's not an intellectual disease,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't understand, if you can't communicate or understand the language, mm-hmm. then of course that affects your ability to perform academically. So education, I mean, is just so important, and this falls under, people get IEPs, individualized education program, because it's part of specialized education, which is the law. And so we find that in a large part, our school systems and the programs that are put together are working to aid our folks with autism. And there's many excellent service providers in this area, as well as private schools that are doing very well. The key is early intervention.
Mm-hmm.
The younger that's diagnosed and the more intense the therapy, the better. And in terms of treatment, which are the therapies, we look for evidence-based programs. So that means that they've been researched, we have data and so forth. And really the most researched is the behavioral therapies. It's called applied behavior analysis. And there's many other systems, and many of those go off of the same learning theory that ABA goes off of.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I did want to pick back up on the point that I was making before the break, Faye, as it relates to the challenges that parents have, the emotional challenges, acceptance. Talk to me about all of those issues.
Sure. So I'll share with you and the others that my son, who is 21 years old now, was diagnosed when he was 3. So that was in January of 2000. The 11th day of the month at 11 o'clock in the morning. It's one of those really life-defining moments that one has. And so for my experience was similar to what Dr. Trouth mentioned can happen, because he met the developmental milestones for the first couple of years, and then I felt like he was slipping away from me. So he had some functional language, and then he lost all of his functional language, to where he only had what's called echolalia and scripting. So that means that he would echo back something, the last word in a sentence. So I couldn't say, are you thirsty? Because he wouldn't answer yes or no questions. So I'd say, do you want juice? And he'd go, juice? So same intonation of the last word.
Mm-hmm.
And then scripting is, I mean, he would watch, Disney videos, the cartoons, and just watch them over and over again, but then would repeat back word for word, not just whole scenes. I mean, practically the whole movie, but out of context, but yet he wasn't calling me mommy or wasn't calling my husband daddy. And, you know, emotionally, before his diagnosis, it was so terribly confusing. And there was not nearly the amount of awareness in the year 2000 that there is now. And I'm really grateful to Autism Speaks for driving that awareness starting in the mid 2000s when they started in 2005. But emotionally, it's just so scary and confusing. And then when you know, you get the diagnosis and find out that the more intervention that you do immediately, the more intense it is, the better he will be for the rest of his life. That's kind of like, you know, there being a bomb go off and you're trying to run and save your child mm-hmm. from it feels like that immediate kind of a thing.
You said he's 21. How is he now?
So we did intensive early intervention. So we did ABA one-on-one, 7 days a week. My husband and I both learned how to do the therapy, and then we hired people to help us. And he is now going almost ending up his third year in college and on the dean's list in the honors program. So he's doing extremely, extremely well.
Everyone can be in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, third year in college. You know, even for children or young people, call them children because of our age, obviously.
Right.
But for young people who have the opportunity to go to college who do not have issues with autism, they're struggling through college anyway. And
right.
So I would say, God bless you because your son is doing very well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're very fortunate, and not everyone responds as well as he did to the behavioral programs and the intervention. Like I said, everyone is different.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Trouth, the big question everyone who is curious about this or even having to address this, where does this neurological disorder come from? Is there something that parents are doing? Is it genetic? Where does it come from?
Well, that is a big mystery. You know, it is a problem. You haven't solved it yet. But there are genetics. There is genetics involved. So there are some genes that may be responsible for, a problem with behavior. You definitely have genes for syndromes like Angelman syndrome and Fragile X and other disorders, which are behavioral associated with communication problems. So there is a gene involvement. In fact, in a study, they studied about 150 siblings who had problems. You know, they did find chromosome 2 and chromosome 7 were carrying some genetic abnormalities. So there is a gene involvement, but it's not the whole truth because people can have the gene, but may be normal. So therefore, there's also probably an environmental influence. And what in the environment does that, we don't know. It may be some toxic agent or some problem in the immune system of the body, internally itself that is causing a problem. There may be some biochemical substrate that may be involved. So all in all, at this point, the answer is we are not sure. Mm-hmm. So it's multifactorial that causes autism. But there are, brain factors that are involved. In the sense that pathologically, we have shown that certain parts of the brain are smaller than normal in patients who have autism spectrum. The frontal lobes are kind of thicker, the limbic system is smaller, the amygdala is smaller. So there are regions in the brain, the cerebellum is smaller, and CAT scans have shown that the ventricles may be large with a smaller cerebellum. So there are some associations. And I mean, I also need to say that mental retardation is an association in about 50% of the children who have autism spectrum disorder. It's a few of them, who are very, very good as face child. So those are the Aspergers, where they're cognitively and intellectually completely normal. But otherwise, you do have children who may be totally non-vocal. you know, we do have examples of children growing up and not being able to talk a single word. You know, so that is possible. And seizures are another problem in the brain that does association. And as said before, we do have also associated with the brain, we have the ADHD syndrome, the hyperkinesis, and some of those cerebellar manifestations. So as I said, there are brain associations, but the exact cause of it, we still do not know.
Doctor, thank you so much for sharing. Also, doctor, I'm about to go to a break. I was wondering whether or not you'd be available for the next 15 minutes or so up until the 8 o'clock end of the program. Are you available to stay
yes,
with us?
Yes, I'm available.
Thank you.
I'm available.
Thank you so much. I need to take a break. Before the break, I wanted to let Jacqueline in Columbia know that we will be talking to her in just a few minutes. Also, we have an update for those of you who are trying to file your taxes before the midnight deadline. As we reported earlier, as a result of a technical problem that the IRS has had with its website, even though they reported earlier that that problem was fixed, the IRS is extending the tax filing deadline for all filers until midnight tomorrow night. That's Wednesday, April 18th. That is, of course, because of the glitch with the agency's website that prevented people from making payments or signing up for payment plans. A lot of folks need to make payment plans, of course. So again, the IRS reporting that the tax filing deadline is now extended for 24 hours after midnight tonight to Wednesday, April 18th. So you do have some breathing room. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more about children on the autism spectrum. We're going to talk to Jacqueline. As I said, lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Need some encouragement to get through the week? Want some inspiring words to uplift you?
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Before we continue with our discussion, we have some late breaking news out of Texas tonight. Former First Lady Barbara Bush has died at the age of 92. Of course, we all know that she was the wife of the first President Bush, President George Herbert Walker Bush. Again, this just coming in, Barbara Bush, former First Lady, dead tonight at the age of 92. Let's go back to the phone lines now as we continue our discussion about National Autism Awareness Month. Jacqueline, thank you for hanging on, calling from Columbia. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. I wanted to ask a question. I know that the primary focus of this discussion is around children on the autism spectrum, but I often wonder about diagnoses of adults, in particular adult males in their 40s and 50s. And I'm wondering if the panelist has any insight. And the reason why I mention this is because I hear amongst many of my peers, I think my husband's on the autism spectrum. I think he's, you know, high functioning Asperger's, and these are obviously non-professionals, making those statements, you know, women making those statements. But I just wonder, you know, in our interactions, you know, based on experiences with adults, why there isn't as much discussion about autism in adult males who are very successful, but do display some of the social limitations associated with autism.
Let me first, Jacqueline, let me first have Faye share her thoughts with it, and then we'll go to Dr. Trouth. Faye, please go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that I think more and more it's being diagnosed later in life. There is a really good toolkit on our website about it that that helps people think through the diagnosis and so forth. But another aspect, though, you were mentioning males. And really, there's also quite a few researchers who believe that it's being underdiagnosed in women. And I'm hearing more and more women. Even I was on a TV show this morning, believe it or not, with a woman self-advocate who was just diagnosed in her early 20s. So oftentimes people are given different diagnoses, you know, and that's part of the increase in the explanation of the increase in diagnosis of autism, because previously there would be different diagnoses, you know, involved.
Mm. Dr. Trouth?
Yes, I agree with Faye. I think it was totally underdiagnosed. You know, and right now there are, when you are in a high position and you are doing functionally very well, people fail to diagnose any problems in patients, in people. But I think that some older people got away with no diagnosis because they performed so well in school and college. The only problem was the social interaction. So therefore, they kind of got overlooked. So I think that's one of the reasons why you see that more adults, you know, are getting diagnosed now at this late age, you know, because they were never really diagnosed as children.
Mm, interesting. Jacqueline, thank you so much for your question. Dr. Ellie, talk to me a little bit more about the kind of work that you are doing with communication with those on the autism spectrum. We talked about it a little bit, but I need to know a little more if you don't mind.
Sure. I mean, and it varies according to individual. Every individual with autism, their spectrum varies to very mild to high functioning. So when you work with an individual with autism, it's very prescriptive based on that child or that individual's needs. And so, again, it varies on how well they're expressing themselves or not expressing themselves, whether they're using verbal output or nonverbal. And so the therapies that you use are going to be catered to that individual. But there are also things that parents can do as well. And so, Faye, you mentioned early intervention, which is key, is working with children between the ages of birth to 3. But there are also parent training programs. So, for example, DC Strong Start offers more than just words program, which is a parent training program that works with parents on how to model language within the home. And so not only are they doing training in a class, but they're going out to the homes to observe a family in play and in conversation and giving those parents skills that they can use in their day-to-day activities to help their children with language.
Give me an example of that when you talk about how parents may be able to model language in the home.
So, labeling items, expanding on sentences. So maybe if a child says milk, maybe saying, do you want milk or want milk? So moving from a one word to two word phrases. Oftentimes when a child is having difficulty expressing themselves, they may just want to point. And pointing is going to be their primary mode of communication. So having the child repeat a word, so they're associating a word with the object that they're requesting, so that expressive communication is taking place. So receptively, if they're pointing, then they're able to express their need, but really encouraging them to verbalize that need. So that's one example.
Mm. Well, and this is something that I found rather curious, Faye, when I met you at an Autism Speaks event in Prince George's County several weeks ago. And, you know, one of our guest, Stacey Brogsdale, her son Hal, has been on this program many, many times. It's just amazing to see how he has grown so wonderfully. But he is on the spectrum.
Right.
When I saw Hal in the hallway, he recognized me because I had done this event for 3 years now, and he said hi, and we were chatting. And I said, how's your mom? And he said, she's upstairs getting dressed because she was upstairs preparing for this event. And I was marveling at just how well he was doing. But when his mom called him up to have him thank people for participating, that is when he had difficulty communicating. Mm-hmm. What was the difference between a casual conversation and being put in a situation where he had to speak publicly?
So I can't say specifically for him what was going on with that, but so I'm going to talk in general
about
these sorts of things. So the many people with autism are sensitive to sights and sounds and crowds and commotion. And being up in front of a crowd of people would create a greater sensory input.
I see.
That is harder to filter through. And in addition to that, remember when I was talking about some coexisting physical things? So there can be greater anxiety mm-hmm. among people with autism, and of course, for most people, being up and speaking in front of a crowd would create more anxiety than a one-on-one situation. Mm-hmm. So,
your thoughts about that, Dr. Trev?
I think it's the same thing. There is a problem with sensory integration. You know, patients who have autism are very, very sensitive to sensory stimuli. You know, and that includes hearing. I mean, hearing is a thing that we haven't talked about, but many of these kids appear as if they have a hearing problem. And one of the first things that you have to definitely rule out is that there is no hearing problem. In fact, they are very sensitive to hearing. And sometimes with loud noises, they put their hands on their ears, or even with sounds which are in a frequency that they are not comfortable in, they put their hands on their ears and they try to wipe out the sound. So any type of a stimulus seems to produce a major problem with them. So I think standing in front of a crowd, you know, having so many people, you know, looking at them and the anxiety that it develops and the problems with the communication that they already have, I think that kind of deters them in a group as opposed to one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Ellie, you were about to make a comment.
No, I would say I would agree to that. It's the sensory, it's the visual, and then it's also the comfort, so the routine. So you mentioned an individual that was familiar with you. And so that's also a part of it as well. So it's all of the factors that you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming on and sharing with us in this very important conversation. And certainly we are not able to cover the entire depth and breadth of this information. But I'm certainly sure that we were able to help some of those parents out there that, you know, perhaps are concerned and going through the process of supporting their mates and their children and the like. So I want to thank, Faye Painter, Executive Director of Autism Speaks for the National Capital Area. Also, Dr. Anna Trout, Chair of the Department of Neurology at Howard University Hospital. And, of course, Dr. Martine Ellie, Clinical Director at Howard University Speech and Hearing Clinic. And, as always, the information that we discussed earlier regarding resources will be posted on our website, whur.com. So again, ladies, thank you so much for participating in the conversation.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, April 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.